I would argue that nobody really knows what's going to happen because, yes, this is an unprecedented set of circumstances. You have artificial interest rate deflation for an extended period of time. You have interest rates, which are now going to go up after that. You have this weird, you know, PPP stimulus program that's been out there. You've got a lot of things, this Molotov cocktail of unprecedented that's leading to an environment that's really unknown. And a typical recessionary economy, which you've heard me say multiple times on this podcast, lasts typically 7 to 10 years from trough to trough or from peak to peak. So we are now, I think I want to say 14, almost 15 years into a very economically prosperous time. And that's what he's referring to as early in the cycle. He knows we are headed into a recessionary economy, but nobody knows what that recessionary economy will look like. Now, I do agree with him in one thing that he's somewhat made reference to and continues to make reference to throughout this interview. Nobody knows what comes next, but we do know we have a weird scenario. Hello, friends, and welcome to the Higher Standard Podcast, where we give you ultra premium, unfiltered truth when it comes to building your wealth and curating the lifestyle of your dreams. No games, no drama, and no shenanigans. I am your host, Chris Nahibi, and I'm here to help you distill the immense amount of information and disinformation out there on the interwebs and give you the opportunity to choose a higher standard for yourself. There are no gurus here, and no one gives a damn about how wealthy you look. I'm an attorney and a banker, amongst other things. Does that mean you should listen to me? Hell no. This is just full disclosure that while we talk about money, wealth, law, investing, and a lot of related topics, you should always speak to your own advisors for an opinion tailored to your unique investment perspective. I am obligated to tell you that nothing contained in this show is in fact legal or investment advice and is being provided solely for entertainment purposes. So sit back, relax your mind, and get ready for a different kind of podcast where we elevate your baseline in crispy, high-resolution audio. This isn't a different standard. It's the higher standard. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is once again the now world-famous Higher Standard Podcast, and I am your host, Chris Nahibi. I appreciate you tuning in for this week, and I got some exciting things. We've upgraded the technology. I'm using some new toys here, and I'm going to take this solo podcast in a bit of a different direction than I normally would. Normally, it's me sitting on a microphone for about 20 minutes telling you about something that I think is educational. But some people think that's ranting and raving, and it can be seen to be obnoxious. And let's be honest, with me and, you know, a little bit of caffeine in me, I can be obnoxious. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a bit of a clip that I saw earlier this week on CNBC. The CEO, Anthony Hsieh, who I respect immensely, went on and he had to talk about his fourth quarter earnings, which had dropped off pretty significantly. And we'll get into all of that in a minute. And it's a pretty interesting thing. So just to give you some context, I was in my office. This came on. I watched it. And then I spent the next couple days really trying to dive into the mortgage industry and if loanDepot is a proxy of many things to come. You know from the Canary in the Coal Mine episode, which released prior to this, that that's kind of my feeling that we think that there's going to be a strained economy coming up. But this, I think, was a huge, I don't know, red flag, or I don't know if you want to call it that, but let's just say it's one of those beginning things that you should take note of. And that's why I want to talk about it. It's been a wild couple of weeks for me. I've interviewed some wonderful people, and the show has been receiving so many inquiries. You know, I'm kind of a one-man operation. My wife, Joanna, she's helping me out right now, and it's cool to have some support and help. But, you know, I didn't expect things to take on a life of their own. For me, it's nice and easy because I can talk about things that I'm going to normally talk about in the course of business anyway, like this. But at the same time, when I talk to so many different entrepreneurs and people from so many different backgrounds, you know, amidst what's happening to Joe Rogan, who owns a podcast, and I recognize I am nowhere near that, but I am an executive at a publicly traded company. And I do have to be, you know, aware of the things that I say, because unfortunately, whether I like it or not, things you say can be used out of context or taken in a different direction. I hope that this podcast never offends anybody. And I hope that my expletive-filled rages and the things that I say and I get carried off on tangents never go too far. But as we've seen in popular media today, things can and very easily do go too far. So I am taking a bit of a risk in doing this in my career, and that this is not an income, you know, generating avenue for me. And it does give me some pause to see all these things going on in the zeitgeist with cancel culture. And I think to myself that the financial literacy of the listener, you, you know, my friends, the people who support me, means more to me than that risk. So for what it's worth, to all of you out there, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for continuing to support. And before I offend anybody, whether it's this episode or one in the past or one to come, just know that I always mean well, and the intent is to be educational, authentic, and to share. All right, so this week, LoanDepot reported their quarterly information and their annual information. I believe the report they put out was for the end of the year, and end of the year 2021, and it was pretty off. So I'm going to jump into this CNBC interview, and then I'm going to stop at a couple periods in between to kind of break down some of my thoughts as somebody who's in this business. Now, as I alluded to and said directly, I do respect Anthony Hsieh immensely. And for those of you who don't know him, he's the CEO of LoanDepot. Before that, well before that, he was at E-Trade. He sold his then mortgage company to E-Trade, got out, went fishing for quite some time. He's a sports fisherman, I think is his hobby. And he came back in the business with what was LendingTree / Home Loan Center. Him and Doug Lebda, who ran LendingTree, Anthony ran Home Loan Center. They then sold it to Barry Diller Interactive Corp. The CFO was a gentleman by the name of Dara, who is now the CEO of Uber. And he went out and, you know, after Anthony Hsieh sold that company again, he you know, worked his time there and then left and went fishing again. And then he got back in the business with LoanDepot. I worked for him briefly at LendingTree, what feels like a lifetime ago. But I got a little bit of a feel for him and how the business model runs. And I can tell you the man has had more unbelievable timing than anybody I've ever seen getting in and out of the market. And I can tell you that with LoanDepot, I don't know if he missed the mark or he knows something that we don't. He's been in the business for 30 plus years. So to see his position now with the company that went public, and I believe this is the first one that he took public himself. I mean, again, don't quote me here. This is just from my experience personally, but I don't know if he missed the mark this time or he didn't. He's been so damn good with timing historically that maybe he knows something that we don't. Maybe he sees something that we don't. But I found this particular interview in a short 4-minute span to be super, super insightful. And frankly, for him to get on CNBC amidst an earnings report like this and speak the way that he did, I have the utmost respect for the way that he handled it and the way he articulated himself, because he could have taken some very challenging conversations right out the gate and, you know, maybe dodged, ducked, dived a little bit, but he didn't do that. He went right at it and he answered in a very courteous and responsible, professional way. So here it is. Let's go.
Earnings report this morning. You noted that the mortgage market is under a period of, quote, pressure right now. We know that because of mortgage rates going up, and the Mortgage Bankers Association is forecasting a 35% drop in mortgage originations. How does LoanDepot stomach that?
Well, hi, Diana. First of all, we have to keep in mind that we're in an industry that often adjusts very rapidly. So in any other industry, when your demand changes by 35% year over year, you have to be able to be very agile and pivot. And that's exactly what the winners in the space is going to do. We also need to understand post-financial crisis, or Dodd-Frank, if you will, the barrier to entry on this new higher level of regulatory oversight is going to be extreme. So the total addressable market, although we're getting into a negative trend with lower volumes, the total addressable market is going to continue to grow because of population growth and average loan amount going up. So the market's just going to get bigger. And those that are in the position today is going to continue to scale. And this is just a great opportunity to continue to grow market share.
So I'm going to stop that right there. As somebody who's in this space, I can tell you that there's a little bit of maybe wishful thinking or maybe addressing the troops within the organization because an alarm's been sounded with the statement. But effectively, you know, LoanDepot at this point in time in this conversation has fallen off at this point 80% from their IPO price, down 7% the day of that interview. And then the next day, they went on to be 9% farther down. I believe at rise of right now, and this is a Saturday after these statements were made, they closed, I want to say, at $377, and then went up to $377 in after hours trading. So Not an exceptional price when you consider that their 52-week high was quite a bit higher than that at $38.68 cents. So their 52-week low as an indicator is $3.55. And I believe that was hit during this time in the last couple of days. So obviously the market is reacting in a pretty visceral way. What Anthony's already told you is that the 35% decrease in anticipated market is effectively I think the industry as a whole has expected that the single family residential market will drop from a $4 trillion market down to a $3 trillion market. And I'm using approximate numbers, but about 35% of it's going to go away. Keep in mind, too, the long end of the curve, the yield curve, is already priced in at least a 25 basis point rate increase in March. And by the time you hear this episode, we'll know whether that happened or not, whether it was 25 basis points or 50, like some people are saying. I don't want to get into the debate whether that's going to happen or not. There's a Bloomberg probability index out there right now, which clearly states that that number is going to increase as far as the rates go, and the Fed's going to make the move. So that's somewhat statistically very, very, very probable. But the long end of the curve that's already priced it in my mind, is the biggest damning thing. And what really I think is the unaddressed part of this interview is the fact that so many of these single family residential lenders, they're largely refinance heavy. I don't know what loanDepot's number is, but it's got to be 70 to 80% of their business. And if rates go up even 25 basis points and people that are, you know, prone to refinance have already refinanced down to lower rates, they then, you know, may not refinance as much and that volume is going to go away. And what he has said in this conversation is that it's okay, we're going to grab more and more market share because last year they passed Wells Fargo in growth, a theme that he will repeat throughout this interview. Is that, you know, we've grown so much in 1 year. I would argue the industry as a whole has grown so much. It's been like wildfire over the last 2 years. That isn't unique to them. And Wells Fargo has made some strategic missteps. So referencing them as kind of like your data point in moving into the second position in just 10 years as a lender is a bit of a mischaracterization in my mind. But it's still a valid point to motivate the troops and to say the company is moving in the right direction. But he's clearly aware of where the market is going and saying they're going to make it up on volume. More transactions in means they can, you know, continue to push out the business and the revenue that they once did, which, you know, may or may not be true. Time will tell. Let's get back into the interview.
And I was going to get on that. You talked so much this morning on the investor call about growing market share, which you did pretty dramatically from 2020 to 2021. But if you have that kind of optimism, if you think you can do that, where's the disconnect between investors? Because your stock is not just having a rough day, but a rough year.
We understand the fact that, you know, this is very early in the cycle. Post-financial crisis, again, this is an all-new community trying to understand how to evaluate different mortgage companies, different mortgage stocks.
So I'm going to stop it right there for a number of reasons. So he said in the previous statement about Dodd-Frank reform changing the way that the business is done. And yes, Dodd-Frank, after the Great Recession, added a ton of compliance risk to the single family residential industry. But compliance risk at this point, keep in mind the Great Recession and the laws that came out of it, that is a long time ago. And people are well settled in how to handle the compliance. Now he's talking about a consolidating market and things changing, and now people don't know how to value these companies, these non-bank lenders or lenders in general that are in the single family market, because they're so afraid of all the things that happened during the Great Recession, and they don't really know what's going to happen in this next economy. I would argue that nobody really knows what's going to happen because, yes, this is an unprecedented set of circumstances. You have artificial interest rate deflation for an extended period of time. You have interest rates, which are now going to go up after that. You have this weird, you know, PPP stimulus program that's been out there. You've got a lot of things, this Molotov cocktail of unprecedented, that's leading to an environment that's really unknown. And a typical recessionary economy, which you've heard me say multiple times on this podcast, lasts typically 7 to 10 years from trough to trough or from peak to peak. So we are now, I think I want to say 14, almost 15 years into a very economically prosperous time. And that's what he's referring to as early in the cycle. He knows we are headed into a recessionary economy, but nobody knows what that recessionary economy will look like. Now, I do agree with him in one thing that he's somewhat made reference to and continues to make reference to throughout this interview. Nobody knows what comes next, but we do know we have a weird scenario. Every recessionary economy since 1929 till now, shortly after the culminating event that started off the triggering of this recessionary downward spiral, in retrospect, when you look at things, real estate values went down after that time, whether it was contemporaneous with it in the Great Recession, where mortgages and real estate led the way to the recessionary economy, or it was after that, like in other recessionary economies, like the fintech bubble burst and things like that, which ultimately pulled the economy down. Real estate values typically went down as a result of that. Home values, as a result, ultimately go down. So because now things are more expensive and inflation goes up, you can see how there's a nexus there, right? It's simple. It's pretty standard fare. This is the first recessionary economy that I am aware of where that didn't happen with real estate values. And we know that there's a supply shortage out there. We know that things like lumber and steel are costing a ton of more money. We know that there are these things out there that make the idea of real estate values going down dramatically improbable at best. So how do you price a company like loanDepot that seems to have had a 90.5% drop in earnings in their fourth quarter? And that was the headline that really led into what is this downward spiral. So now, as of today, you've got a 90% drop off in their IPO price from well over $30 a share down to $3.55 at the low point, now at $3.79 after hours trading. And you've also got fourth quarter earnings down 90.5%. Oh me, oh my, what are you going to do? How do you maintain the image? Well, Anthony, as a CEO of this company, does it in beautiful form and fashion. He addresses these challenges head on in his next statements. Let's jump back into it.
In addition to our $11 trillion of overall industry volume, last year, because of low interest rates, the industry broke an all-time record, Diana, over $4 trillion of business. We're adjusting to a forecast of $3 trillion this year. So there is excess capacity in the industry that needs to shrink down or adjust down. And while that's happening, there's a lot of pressure to margins because people are becoming very aggressive in their pricing structure, but that is not sustainable. Your strategy is, and the barrier to entry is going to limit new players from coming in. So this is just an adjustment, and this is not anything new, unfortunately, but it is part of the natural process, and the market just will get larger as we come out to the other side.
So that is an absolutely accurate statement. And I have seen personally Anthony execute this as recent as his last transaction, loanDepot, where their model was to really offer the super low cost model because they had scales of economy behind them, drive the small people out of business. And as the market consolidated, they could pick up more market share that these other people couldn't. And he says that the margins are getting tighter and tighter and people can't continue to operate in these thin margins. They can't, but loanDepot can. So in theory, he's expecting these economically tough times that are coming up to challenge the smaller shops and even some of the bigger shops who don't have the efficiency that loanDepot has. And he will go on to talk about some of the technology stacks that he has to offer. He has this technology in place to gain efficiency in scales of economy. You can do more with the technology with less people, and less people generally means less cost to you, unless, of course, they're salespeople and they're originating, they're paying for themselves. So this is a rhetoric I have heard him and many people in the industry say before. However, I will tell you, layoffs are always a part of this because you have to understand that's the mortgage business. That's what they do. They scale up, they scale back. It's just a human capital perspective, and it's not a malicious thing. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just saying that's how you grow and scale, upsize and downsize mortgage companies. Banks are a little bit different in that respect in that they have net interest margin. They have different product lines. They have a lot of things that they do. And most banks typically operate on a super, super lean efficiency ratio. They're not really built for these, you know, scaled operations the same way these non-bank lenders like loanDepot are. Let's get into the next question.
Well, speaking of those margins, obviously you need to protect your expenses. Do you foresee, you know, I have to say we did stories too, even 1 year ago, about so much hiring going on in the mortgage business. There were these job fairs. Do you expect to have to go the other way? That is job cuts.
The entire industry is going to have to adjust down. When your demand reduces by 35%, something has got to give. And those companies with differentiated assets, such as loanDepot, we have the second most notable brand in the industry. We have scale. We currently have over 10,000 employees funding 30,000 mortgages a month. And we have our own proprietary tech stack, Mello, that we've been building for the last 8 years. So along with the efficiencies that we're gaining and the scale that we have and the conversion and at the level of customer delight that we've been so heavily focused on, what we hope to accomplish through the cycle and what we believe is we can continue to penetrate market share. We increase our market share from 2.4% to 3.5% in a single year. The company's only 12 years old, and we've grown by over 45% annually, year over year, for our first 12 years. So we've done a very good job passing Wells Fargo on our 10th year, an iconic brand for us to actually help more customers and mortgages than someone like that tells you that we are doing something right. But this is a no doubt a negative trend in our industry, but it is not sustainable and it will come back around.
So that right there was a really powerful redirect. He clearly agreed that layoffs were inevitable. The whole market will, quote, have to adjust down. I completely agree with that. I completely understand it. That is the business. That is how this operates. So I give him kudos. That was a very tough set of circumstances to go on and get in front of the camera and to address these things head on. Tremendous respect. The man knows more about this space than many do. So let's dive into some of the finer points that he just raised. Okay. Well, Wells Fargo, like we already talked about, you know, I'm not sure that's the best indicator, but loanDepot is the second largest non-bank lender in the country. And in 12 years to reach that, when he started, I want to say in 2009, that is exceptional to say the least. What they have done growth and scale wise, it's almost unfathomable. So this is though their first year public. And to see this amount of volatility in their first year is somewhat shocking to me. Anthony was announced to be a billionaire when they went public. You know, he's got a wonderfully massive home. I mean, the guy is going to do well no matter what. I'm not knocking him again in any way, shape, or form. But this goes to show you the volatility that's in the space. And he quickly pivoted from that conversation to point out things like his tech stack, to point out the 12 years history in the company, to point out things that you have to do as CEO when these challenging times come up. So kudos to him for handling the things the way that he did. But let's look at this as a proxy of the economy. So much of what I've said on this podcast has been opinion. And I respect that that's opinion, and you don't have to believe my opinion. I you know, 1,000% can get behind that. And there's economists out there like Zandi over Mark Zandi at Moody's and people that are way, way more talented and skilled than I am. And I don't know that I really have an opinion that that's worth anything, but I see a lot of this stuff. I'm in this business. I'm steeped in it. And I know this company. It's in my backyard. I know a lot of the players that are in it. And it makes me scratch my head because these people are talented. Anthony Hsieh and his team are talented people. That whole team over there is skilled. So for them to have a 90.5% drop off in the fourth quarter with the yield, you know, curve picking up that extra 25 basis point assumption, for the market to be taking this much of a reaction this early in the game, he says it's an adjustment period. It'll recover. He knows this exceptionally well. I hope that's true. But I got to tell you, my gut instinct on this unprecedented time is that you're not going to have real estate leading the way to a recessionary economy. I think what I think we're already in a recessionary economy. I think we're at the top of that curve. And I think Anthony thinks that too with some of the statements that he made. But what I do see happening is you see the interest rate increases, you see inflation at 7%, you're going to see a slowdown. You're going to see another quarter point increase. And then that's the point where you're going to see refinances come to almost a screeching halt. It's still going to be historically interest rate lows when you consider the perspective of last 100 years. But so many people have refinanced down to such low rates that it's not going to be economically viable for them to refinance to call it a 4.5% or 5% unless they need cash out, unless they're buying a property. And whenever the market changes like this, these non-bank lenders who are very largely refinance heavy because that's what their outward sales are and their calls are, they shift to this, you know, I'm going to try to be more of a sales and purchase and contract kind of situation. That's where they usually fall off. But this economy is different in that you have such a pent-up demand and so many people out there getting pre-qualified for properties, but they can't win one. I mean, just a couple months ago, it took 8 offers to get one single, you know, accepted offer on a property if you were a home buyer. So there's a lot of people out there who are still shopping. That may prolong the impacts of what I think the rate impact will be to these businesses, to this particular sector and this particular industry. I'm not ringing any, you know, bells or alarms at this point in time, but I got to say, when this company fell as fast as it did, as quickly as it did, in this particular set of circumstances, and loanDepot is a company I respect, and you know, it shocked me. It absolutely shocked me. I was, you know, stuck and glued to the television. I watched this interview. I came back. I watched it again, and ultimately decided this was something that I should share for the podcast. Do with this information what you will. don't knock anybody. This is a space. I mean, Anthony became a billionaire because of this company. This is a resounding success by all outward measures, as far as I'm concerned. I've been clear on this podcast. I said it three or four times that, you know, this is not a knock on anybody there. But I do think there are significant challenges ahead in the mortgage space. Some very sophisticated mortgage lenders that are non-bank lenders, in some case bank lenders that I know, they downsized almost a year ago prepping for this. And I thought they were a bit proactive and crazy. Maybe they weren't. I'm a student of the game. These are the kind of things that I like to keep a perspective on, because these have reverberating effects. If you're a home buyer right now and you're trying to buy a home, maybe the increase in rates will slow things up and the competition will ease off a little bit. Maybe home values will, you know, slow down. Maybe you'll see a less of an increase. Last year, people predicted CoreLogic, Moody's, everybody else, has had 3-5% increase in home values. Well, we got a whole hell of a lot more than that. I want to say the number was closer to 20%, even in some cases, you know, even closer to 30% in some areas. But I think on average, it was 24% and 24 to 26% in California. I mean, it was high of an increase in property values in a single year. This year, people are talking, oh, it's going to be a slower year. It's going to be, you know, between 3 and 5%. So again, a lot of that same statement, but let's be real here. No one really knows. If loanDepot is an example of what's coming, you got your first peek into how the economy is changing and how quickly the landscape can change, because there hasn't even been an interest rate increase and all these things are happening. Keep an eye on their stock. I hope they pull through it. I hope that there's a positive rainbow here. And if there's anybody you want to bet on in this space, it's Anthony and his team. That they've done this. And the guy has had impeccable timing on every single one of these companies that he's built. And at times I've thought he was wrong and I've been wrong. So it is what it is. Thank you again for tuning in to the now world famous Higher Standard Podcast. All over the world, people are listening. I appreciate every single damn one of you. Please, please leave me a review. It means a lot. I need them. I've only got like 60 right now, and I really feel like I should have thousands, because you guys love me and I love you, and I feel like this is a one-sided relationship. So, you know, while you're driving, don't do it. But if you're listening at home, you're on your phone, you can do it. Just type in your name. You don't have to log in or nothing. I love Chris. He's sexy. Whatever you want to put there, just put it there. Give me something. But it's got to be 5 stars. A quote, honest, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, 5-star review. We have some tremendous guests coming up. I'm really, really excited. I don't name drop guests in advance, but there are some people that are super culturally relevant. One in particular, I'm hoping we can work things out with his business manager. And somebody did tell me, actually, I posted on Instagram. And if you don't follow me on Instagram, I do a little bit of Q&A there from time to time. Definitely do some stuff on YouTube as well. But I posted on Instagram, you know, who'd you like to see? And people noted that there weren't a lot of female guests. And I want to address that right now. Like, I want females to come on. I actually just interviewed a wonderful female executive a couple days ago, but that episode has not aired yet. And there's a couple more coming that are scheduled. I don't know what it is, but I've just been unsuccessful at getting you know, some of the female executives that I want out there. I think there's a lot less females in business in general, but I'm getting shot down at the same rate I get shot down from other people, male and female, on invites. So it's just, you know, less of a likelihood statistically in a lot of ways. But in order to remedy that, I asked for some names, and I've reached out to pretty much every single one of those names. And I think we got some interesting people coming on, some females that are in some different spaces, some from health and fitness, some from just pure entrepreneurship, some from more corporate executive business that I'm going to bring on. And I think they bring an interesting and unique and different perspective. I'm super excited to share them with you. So for those of you who commented on the Instagram, they're coming. Bear with me. It's largely because it's a one-man show and I reach out to as many people as I can. And statistically speaking, I just don't have an ability to focus right now on one gender or not. I'm just trying to get good guests for you guys. But all right, that's it for this week. We'll catch you soon. And if you're not leaving that review, go. Come on. You can do it. Take care. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation on the Higher Standard Podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe or follow on whatever platform you are listening to this on. If you like this episode, please write a review and share it with us. We're getting the show up and running right now, so every message, every review, and every note counts. This show exists to showcase what's possible when leaders decide to uphold a higher standard for their businesses, their investments, their families, and most importantly, themselves. If you want to see more of my content, I post daily on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, so be sure to follow me on your favorite social media platform. And with that, it is a wrap. And as always, I look forward to hanging with you all on the next episode.